he would glide along inside the B-ring for more than 10 minutes, and that had nearly killed him. Now he was diving through, in and out, but slowly enough to have a good chance to pick up samples of the ice particles and the creatures that lived in them. If they're really there, Wanderley found herself thinking. If they really exist, and they're not just a wish dream of mine. "Sample boxes open," she heard Wanamaker's voice. "Boxes open. Check," Gaeta confirmed. "We're reading the temperature inside the boxes as within 3 degrees of ambient," said Wanamaker. "Good," replied Gaeta. "Don't want to toast these babies once we get 'em in the samplers." Wanderley recalled that the first time Gaeta had gone through the rings, the ice creatures had coated his suit so thickly it had become impossible for him to move his limbs or even communicate with the controllers. This time, they had put miniature heating coils on his comm antennas. It didn't take much energy to keep the antennas above the ring's ambient temperature of -178°C. But they had to keep the rest of the suit cold, especially the sample boxes. He was getting close enough now that she could see individual chunks of ice on her display screen. No way to judge sizes, although some of the pieces were obviously much larger than others. "Getting dinged pretty good now," Gaeta reported. "Lots of impacts." "Sizes?" Wanamaker asked. "Nothing big enough to shake me," said Gaeta. "But the impact counter is lighting up like a video game display now." "Don't let him get struck by a big one," Wanderley pleaded silently. She knew there were chunks of ice as big as trailer trucks in the rings. "Don't let him get hurt," she prayed to a god she didn't really believe in.
12 April 2096. Encounter.
"Here we go," said Pancho, trying consciously to keep her tongue from between her teeth. She'd lacerated her tongue badly once in the crash landing of a clipper ship, back in her early astronaut days. For years afterward, she'd carried a protective mouthpiece with her when she flew, but she seldom remembered to put it in place when she needed it. Now she stood at the controls of the transfer craft and watched through the observation port in front of her as she dived the little vehicle through the Cassini gap between the A and B rings. She could see glittering bits of ice racing toward her, pinging the craft's hull, hitting the port's transparent glass steel.
"Some gap," she said. "Lots of crap in here."
Wanamaker, standing beside her, paid no attention. He was in contact with Gaeta, who was just entering the B-ring.
"Starting to ice up," Gaeta was saying. "It's getting tough to move my arms and legs."
Wanamaker glanced at the readouts on the panel at his side.
"Internal temperature holding okay," he said.
"So far," answered Gaeta.
Pancho wished she had viewports on the sides of the cramped cockpit, or cameras out there at least. She wanted to see more than just the straight-ahead view. She wanted to see the rings and their ragged edges as she dove the spacecraft in between them. She wanted to be able to yell, "Yahoo!" as she dived through the plane of the rings. As it was, she couldn't see the rings. Couldn't even see the huge glowing curve of Saturn's massive bulk. Nothing but star-flecked darkness out there, and swarms of ice particles zooming at her. It was like driving in the dark of night through a raging blizzard.
Gaeta had two contradictory worries wrestling in the back of his head. Will I be in the ring long enough to get a decent sampling for Nadia? Will I be in the ring so long that these fregado ring particles will cover me with ice the way they did last time? Damn near killed me. The icy ring was spread out before him now, like a vast field of glittering snow stretching as far as he could see. Off in the distance to his right was a smear of darker stuff, like dust or carbon soot, coming up fast in spite of the retro burn. Glancing at the display splashed in color along the bottom of his visor, he saw that all the suit's functions were still in the green, except that when he tried to move his arms or legs, the servo motors went into the red. Encased in ice, he realized. Then he saw a rime of ice along the edge of his visor, and it was growing visibly. "Visor's getting coated," he said into his helmet microphone. Wanamaker immediately replied, "A life support function's still in the green." Gaeta nodded inside the helmet. "So far. Antenna's still functioning." "Hey, Jake, you trying to cheer me up?" "Just doing my job, buddy." "The suit's external temperature is dropping," Gaeta reported. "Copy. It's within allowable limits." "So far. You'll only be in the ring for 3 minutes." "Gotta get there first." He saw that his visor was almost completely covered with ice now. "Hang tight, buddy. We're on course to pick you up at the rendezvous point." "Right. You should be entering the ring's main body now." A flash of light startled Gaeta. "What the hell was that?" Pancho called out. "Hey, we got a power surge here. Auxiliary power's on. Wait, hang on. Main power's back online." "Are you okay, Manny?" Wanamaker asked. "Got a flash. Like all my displays flared up at once." "Now?" "Looks normal now. Everything in here looks normal. But life support's on battery instead of the main power bus." "What the hell happened?" Wanamaker groused. "I'm entering the ring." Squinting through the ice that now covered almost his entire visor, Gaeta saw nothing but glittering, swirling ice particles. It was like being in a blizzard, alone in an overpowering storm of gleaming white, except that there was no wind, no noise at all. With a sudden clutch of fear, he realized that the air fans inside his suit had gone silent.
Wanamaker saw the red light glare on his display panel. "Air circulation system," he muttered. Pancho glanced over. "They can live without him." "For how long?" Wanamaker challenged. "Long enough," said Pancho, pecking at her master keypad. "My air fans are down." Gaeta's voice sounded calm, but both Pancho and Wanamaker knew this was trouble. "Try restarting them," Wanamaker said. "Did that. No joy." "Hang tight," Pancho called out. "I'm adjusting our pickup point. We'll fish you out in 8 minutes." She looked at the readout on the control panel. "Make that 7 minutes, 40 seconds. "You'll be getting too close to the ring," Gaeta objected. "Shut up and save your air," said Pancho. "We'll get you before you even start to cough." "What could make the air fans go out?" Wanamaker asked her. Pancho shrugged. "Murphy's Law? Maybe that power surge?" "How can he have a power surge the same instant that we do?" Pancho demanded. "Besides, it was all over in a second or two. No damage?" "No damage to us," Wanamaker corrected.
"When in trouble, check all the systems," Gaeta told himself. "Life support is on battery backup, and the Chingado fans have crapped out. No air circulation means the oxygen level drops and CO2 builds up. Power failure? Everything else is working okay." He felt beads of perspiration dotting his upper lip. "The suit's master computer has a decision tree," Gaeta reminded himself. "When electrical power goes critical, it starts to shut down systems in order of their importance. I can get along without the fans for 10, maybe 20 minutes. Next thing the computer will shut down is the exterior sensors. If the power system's failing..." His visor was completely caked with ice now, and sure enough, the displays from the suit's exterior sensors went dark. "Mierda," Gaeta grumbled to himself. "Now I'm flying blind."
"Don't fire up your propulsion jets," Pancho's voice warned. "Your beacon just went out, so we have to track you by dead reckoning."
"Okay. No jets," Gaeta confirmed, glad that the comm system was still working. "Stay off my antennas, little guys," he said silently to the ring creatures. "Gremlins," he thought. "Little beasties that screw up your machinery." The clock display still worked, he saw. The green LCD numerals showed that he should be in the midst of the ring. 2 more minutes at most and I'll be out. Then Pancho can pick me up, if she can find me.
Holly pushed through the crowd of well-wishers who gathered around her after the debate closed, mostly women, almost entirely women, except for Wilmot and a roundish, unhappy-looking man standing beside Mrs. Yanez, her husband, Holly recalled. A much bigger throng was swarming about Eberly, including Dr. Urbain and his wife. Eberly basked in their approval, smiling warmly, shaking hands. The lights flickered briefly. Everyone looked up to the ceiling. But before anyone could say a word, the light steadied again.